do.
Okay. Thanks, Arlene, and my osteoarthritic hip thanks you, and my heart also for getting them going with that exercise. In terms of the programming committee meeting the other night, I don't know what your preference was to some of these comments, but there were some things that that some of the members had to say that I just wanted to get your opinion on those, and then I'd like to also make a suggestion. One was, quote-unquote, diversity causing loss of listenership among those who used to listen all day. Two, quote-unquote, oppressed communities overused that turns people off. Programming about current issues, whatever, didn't elaborate what program about current issues, but that, and then the person said, not just that you're oppressed, but what's new about what's happening to your oppression. I know you can't explain what that person meant, but that's a little troubling to me for someone who's on the programming committee, because it seems a little antithetical to the Pacifica mission. So I wanted to know, what was your preface to that? And also, if I think Rob Robinson, a former board member, used to always say that, for those of us who've been around, he used to always beat this thing to death about surveying our listeners. Those long-timers, right? Remember, he always said that. I think we do need to survey our listeners in terms of what they want to hear. And I think that during this upcoming election, that might be a perfect time to save cost to probably come up with a progressive survey, not just the regular Arbitron type of survey that actually is customized for Pacifica. And that might be one way for you to get some information. So I want to know, what's your overall feel about this? I don't think that you subscribe to what was said there, but what did you say prior to these comments?
I'm not sure
in your presentation. I think it might have been a presentation.
I'm not sure what I said prior to them, because when I talked, it was very similar to what I was talking about today, and then there were just all kinds of things thrown out afterwards, although I responded to most of them. But as I recall it, the diversity issue, when you take it out of context, sounds anathema to our mission. But what was really being said was that, or at least the way I understood it, what we were talking about, was the fact that you can't create so much of a checkerboard that people can't find your programs, and so consequently you lose your audience. That you have to come up with some, you can't be all things to all people, but it doesn't mean you don't subscribe to diversity. But once you start, every hour of the week it represents some different group, you've reached a point that people can't find your programming, and you lose them. That's what I recall from that. I think that the person who mentioned the oppressed topic wasn't saying that they didn't think there were oppressed people, but just that they heard that word overused so much, and that they would have liked to have seen, they would like to see people find new ways to discuss similar topics, and also to be talking about, what's going on now, which may be oppression, but that sometimes we get words in our craw and overuse them to the point that they no longer have a solid meaning. Now, that's the way I took that comment. I'm not the one who said it, so I can't subscribe to what the person meant. And the person talking about current issues was saying that they really would like to see a lot of topical current issues on a daily basis covered. The survey, I totally agree with you, Nia. Once again, drawing from my experience at WMNF, they do a yearly survey, recognizing that when you do a survey, you're pretty much appealing to the people that already listen to you, but at least you're getting their feedback. And one also has to recognize that some groups are more apt to return surveys than others, so you take that into account when you're looking at what a survey means. Just like when you are looking at Arbitron figures, you also have to take into account that some groups are less likely to be included in Arbitron because of lack of phones, or up until recently there was no utilization of cell phones, and so much of the young population was totally missed. I know that my nephews, two of them don't even have landlines, and I'm sure that that's true of many of the young people in this country. But what WMNF does is puts up a survey online, and then they offer to mail it to people. I like the idea of utilizing our election mailing. I think that's got some real value, Nia, and I think that's something we should explore with this season. But I do think that surveys provide even more valuable information on the whole than Arbitrons, which just by virtue of the fact of what a small percentage we are pretty flawed to begin with. They are the only way to get some of that information, but in all honesty, the 1 in 10 rule probably tells us more about how many listeners we have than the Arbitrons actually do.
Jennifer.
Yeah, thank you, Arlene, and I really enjoyed the programming call as well. I thought it was very productive, and I think everybody on the committee thought it was productive. I wanted to mention, actually, on the call, but I didn't get a chance, that in conjunction with the obesity program, Kathy Davis and the health programmers at BAI are doing a diabetes initiative, and I don't know if you were aware of that. They did, I think, some cardiac-related initiative, but they meet with members of the community.
Great.
I have workshops trying to do something about the diabetes thing and the alternative doctors that participate in it. I think all of the programmers do. So you might want to contact Kathy and link up with that. You know, I don't think it's getting much publicity outside of the little BAI community, but, you know, if this is a Michelle Obama thing, I think we could link New York into it. The other thing is that, you know, I think Al Jazeera, there are very few people that don't support some kind of action in getting Al Jazeera onto Pacifica.
That's good.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page. There are problems, but, you know, maybe we can work them out.
One person, one listener in Houston suggested to me that it be back to, that was strongly supporting it and suggested that we try to bring it and back to back with
the BBC,
a program that was, you know, more moderate, and then have somewhere some time that people were able to also discuss the issues that were brought.
Well, you know, debating is always brings interest. You know, I mean, we have controversy about people like Gary Null talking about AIDS and AIDS not existing, and, you know, some people even on our board say, well, you know, you can't have him on the air talking about that because it's deadly for people with AIDS to believe that it's not a virus or whatever. But I think it should be aired and it should be debated. And that's where all the information, you get the most information if you have both sides and the most compelling programming. Rather than being preached at, you know, you have two sides of the story. But anyway, the other thing is, there, you know, even though Air America, which is, you know, none of us really support their politics, to a great extent, but their talking heads all do, yeah, all day, but they do have a following. I mean, Tom Hartman, Ed Schultz, they have huge followings.
You mean the late Air America?
Yes. No, it was a late Air America because they were paying producers $750,000 and doing stupid business things. More bad business practices than the content. The content is popular, and that all of those talking heads are spread out on various small radio stations all over the country. But, you know, what I'm getting to is that all of those people are bloggers. They do Twitter, they do Facebook, they get out and they publicize their programs, and I think our programmers don't do enough of that they should cultivate their own followings and not depend on the radio station to publicize them. I think that should be a requirement of a programmer to get out and kind of talk about that. The other thing is, you know, we're doing it on BAI, a special about the Armenian genocide, which you know, is a great thing, and it's something that's never talked about. The one thing I'm wondering is, did we actually tell any Armenians that we're having this? You know, I would bet that we didn't. And this is an essential flaw of programming, is not getting out to the community. The last thing that I was thinking of is, in terms of internet radio, a lot of, you know, the internet can spread our programming within our listening areas, like where we live. It would go out to the very east end of Long Island, where you can't hear it on the radio. But there's still New York people, and up in Westchester, and there are all these land use issues and places like that. People, you know, really hot environmental issues. People are like just going nuts. If we carried some of these like town council hearings and on the internet, and we advertised in the local papers, which people do read in those sort of suburban and rural areas, we would probably pick up quite a big following.
You know, that raises one issue that I didn't mention and I meant to, and that is there was some discussion, I think, in the programming meeting, but also I've had this in a number of places, and that is, with how do we promote our Pacifica stations in the best way, or our community radio stations? We can't do what radio just typically does and just go out and say, listen to WBAI. I mean, we can say that, but there's every chance that somebody's going to tune in and not like what they hear and assume that that's what's on 24 hours a day. One of my favorite stories is the person who's now president of the board at WMNF moved to Tampa from Boston. And she was, she's a pilot. She was driving to work one night and saw this billboard. And it said WMNF, and it had all kinds of different things spread around that it was. And she thought, oh boy, that really appeals to me. And so she tuned in to 88.5, and she was getting really strong alternative music that just didn't appeal at all to her. And she thought, oh, well, I must have seen the wrong thing. That doesn't sound like what I was looking at. You know, it didn't mention alternative music as one of the things that you'd hear. And so she kind of forgot about it. She said a couple weeks later, she was driving down, and it happened to be between noon and 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and she saw the same billboard, and she thought, oh, I'm going to try again. Well, this time she got the Sunday Simca. And so then she suddenly thought, I get it. They do eclectic programming, things that you wouldn't find anywhere else. Unfortunately, she'd been living in Tampa for 5 years before she found that.
What did the billboard say? Did the billboard say what they were doing?
We were doing some billboards then that had been, the billboards were donated, but we had to pay for the printing, which is expensive.
What was printing?
Posted. It was WMNF, and then it had, and they had some pictures of people. One was in kind of a Haitian-looking person, and one was an older woman, and one was a couple of young people. They had five different versions that were scattered around, and the billboard company donated them for some periods of time while the billboard wasn't paid for by somebody else. I'm not sure that that's the most effective way to get your message out, but they were out there. I'll tell you what was wrong with those billboards is that they didn't say WMNF big enough, and all this other stuff kind of scattered all over, and if you're driving by, you don't have a lot of time to catch
what was printed on the billboard. What did they print on there?
But it was interesting.
I put myself on the stack, Leslie. I'll put you on too. What do you sense? What's your take on what people are talking about when they say, "Well, it's whiny. We don't like it because it's whiny." What is that about? What do you think it is?
I think it's two things. I think part of it is when people take to the air and complain about the board, complain about other programmers, complain about the station, complain that they don't get enough airtime. They bring their own, you know, personal feelings of what's going on at the station into it in an inappropriate manner, and that's one of the reasons that I made that one proposal at the March meeting. The other thing I think they're talking about is when people kind of become almost the repetitive sound of the same issue, but not really offering any new information, any positive suggestions about what kind of action they could take, even if that action is just learning about it, but rather kind of whining that, oh, this country's so bad, it's going to the dogs, you know, that kind of an attitude that doesn't really further their knowledge or participation.
Summer.
Thank you, Arlie. I guess one of the things I want to watch out for in terms of programming from what I was hearing you saying is I really don't want us to move towards more homogenized script programming. I feel it's a real problem here at KPFK. We now have like Ian Masters on 5 days a week, which is State Department guests, and it sounds exactly like NPR. And some of them are very professional sounding and informed. And I'm not saying they're not, but he particularly is insulting to other programmers that everyone who disagrees with him is an idiot. And I find that a problem no matter who's saying that. But I, you know, I've been listening to KPFK since I'm 11 years old. I've been listening for 25 years. And it was a lot more interesting when I was growing up than it is now. We have no diversity of discussion about a whole lot of issues. You know, the healthcare debate was going on. We were just the Democratic Party. That's all we were, the entire station, all the time. And it was constantly, you know, critical of anybody who was critical, and you must be a right-wing moron if you question this in any way. And, like, that's not alternative. It's not giving us any kind of diversity of opinion. And when we get more radical viewpoints, they are relegated to the middle of the night as being the only place appropriate to put them. And when I hear that, like, one-hour programming would be put to nighttime slots in the weekend when nobody's listening, that bothers me. And I'm not against having some reliable expectations of certain hours, especially drive time, but we're not achieving that either because we have the same kind of droning discourse that goes on with like two guests for an hour, and if you actually want to know if you can get through on the freeway, you've got to turn to AM radio so you can get a traffic report. We've got one guy who's great. He's political, he gets people calling in, and he cuts in with traffic twice during the hour because, hey, it's drive time. I love him. I can listen to him all week long. But it's also because he's much more engaged with our audience. You know, whenever we have call-in programs, our listeners are way more diverse than our programmers. Do you know what I mean? They express a wide range of opinions. We get people are going from here to here, and it's like, whoa! And I love that. And it makes a really good radio. And we've had programmers in the past where, you know, they have an engaging dialogue and argument with the public. And because of that, everybody loves it, and they tune in, even if they don't particularly care for what the host, his opinion is, if he lets other people talk. And another part of that is, like, news. Our news department has died. We have no news in Los Angeles. We have the hybrid Berkeley news, and we hear the weather in San Francisco every afternoon. And it stinks. I mean, I can barely listen to our news anymore. We don't have news in the daytime anymore. We used to have a 12 o'clock news report. We now have only 6 p.m. news. It tells you nothing that's going on. Like, a bomb could drop in Los Angeles, and we wouldn't hear about it. Okay? And I have to go to AM radio to find out, like, literally, like, oh, there's a volcano in Iceland. Wow, I should know about this. You know? And like, the mountains, like, you know, in Southern California, like, fire is a big deal, right? But the whole side of the mountain could be burning, and we won't hear about it on our station. So this is why people don't listen, because we're not relevant half the time. And like, social protests, right? We don't have anybody that does anything live or remote. We have a couple of dedicated, you know, programmers that go out on their own, and I have offered for 2 straight years, somebody give me a pat, because I'm at protests all the time, and I'll do, you know, interviews with people and just give them, somebody edit them, you know what I mean? We're not actively engaged in that. You know, the Latino, National Latino Congreso was here for its first 2 years of meetings, largest gathering of Latino politicians in the country. My mother and I were both delegates and helped pass motions and everything. It was exciting, it was dynamic, blah, blah, blah. Sure, it's mainstream politics, but a lot was going on. Did we have a remote broadcast? Anything? Do we even cover it? No. The Latino programmers were there. The Spanish language programmers were the only one who gave a damn. And the rest of our station completely ignored literally the largest gathering in U.S. history of Latino politicians 2 years in a row. This year they were in Texas. I don't know if you guys did better than we did, but we didn't do too well. So it's things like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, the programming you have to have a reason to engage. It has to be dynamic. It has to be challenging. It does not need to be NPR to get listeners. It has to be well done so that people aren't hemming and hawing. That's the professionalism, not the content. What you say, does it fit with a mainstream dialogue? But did you say it well? Did you get good guests on there? Did you get informed people that know their topics? And it would be good if there were several different opinions on major topics and not this idea that if you don't agree with a centralized theme,
you're a whack job, which is what's going on right now. We've got programmers who treat anybody who's on a different viewpoint as insulting their intelligence. That, you know, it's not just like intelligent people can disagree and have different points of view about important topics, and that's okay, because that's what a free society is about, and that's what our mission is. It's not to be progressive left radio. It's to be the place you can hear things you don't hear anywhere else, which is a wider range of viewpoints. And I just don't want to see things that are perceived as more radical relegated to the internet, where the government can track everything you listen to every moment. And we're going to go further into that as, you know, net neutrality we just lost. So I think we need to take advantage of these new technologies and utilize them better, but we don't want to put the radical stuff there. We want to keep the radical stuff on our airwaves and make it so it sounds good, you know, and then people will listen to it, because we'll be, you know, people are worried about what's going on. The world is falling apart, and we're not there on the point. So
I don't disagree with most of what you're saying. And when I talk about...
I don't want to be NPR.
No, I don't either. In fact, NPR has moved so far to the right that I practically never turn it on. But that's a whole other discussion. But when I talk about strips, what I'm saying is that if you have public affairs programming at 11 o'clock, it doesn't have to be the same person every day, but you don't expect to hear a speech on Monday and an Indonesian music program on Tuesday and the Native American dances on Wednesday, and then some other kind of public affairs, maybe a call-in show on Thursday, all at the same time. For people that are listening at their workplace, that's not going to bring in a lot of the people at the time when they can listen during the week. They need to know that there's some kind of consistency to what they're listening to, where if you bring those specialized segments at 7 or 8 o'clock after people are off the road in the evening, if you bring them on the weekend, it's amazing. Some of our stations actually have their largest audiences on Saturday and Sunday.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily... Now, the middle of the night is another issue, but weekends are not necessarily dead radio time.
If I may, I'll give you a for instance, right? Because, you know, Los Angeles, with our demographics, we have Spanish language programming from 9 to 11 o'clock at night, right? That kills the English language programming effectively at 8 o'clock. I mean, at the end of the 8 o'clock program, right? And so we've had these new programs getting thrown into the ghetto between 11 and midnight when nobody, and I mean nobody, is listening because they don't even remember to tune back in. They tune back in by midnight because Roy has a following. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's midnight. I got to listen to Roy of Hollywood. But that hour between 11 and 12 to put new programming there to try it out, oh, my God, why not kill it on the spot? Why even bother? You know what I mean? Just to say it's dead because you put it there. Nobody even knows it's there to check it out.
That's the kind of consideration I'm talking about, Summer.
Okay.
Is that, you know, whether you're talking about vertical or horizontal, strips, you've got to look at things that are going to keep listeners engaged, because once you have everybody tuning out because something so completely changes, it's very hard to get an audience back in. And so as much as we want to represent as much of the community as we possibly can, we have to also take some of these things into consideration in order to be good radio. So, you know, it's a balance.
Yeah.
The other thing that you mentioned that I had on my list, but I realized I didn't mention, was news.
Yes.
And I have been approached by a number of people who, you know, talk about, and I'd be interested in feedback from people on this issue too, but that the fact that they really wish that we had a lot more national news team for Pacifica that was providing input that the stations could use as part of their programs. And yes, some of that's coming from free speech radio news, but a lot of people are saying they don't feel that they are filling the void that was left by the loss of the Pacifica News Department from a number of years ago. And I think that localized news programming on our stations is extremely important and
that's
really needs to be addressed. And I understand
your
frustration here in Los Angeles, Summer, and I share it.
Thank you. Yeah, we really,
I really do.
We've become irrelevant to ourselves because we don't have anything locally going on.
And, you know, one of the things that we learned in Tampa was that we retained an awful lot more of our drive time audience when we started giving traffic reports.
You have to. You live 2 hours a day.
So even though
here,
Tampa does actually music programming during the drive times, because we realized we were not going to pull the All Things Considered and Morning Edition audiences away, and Tampa's a pretty conservative place and it's not a huge market, it's 19th. So we offer an alternative that offers news every half hour, but also when we added traffic, a lot of the people that really didn't want to listen to NPR didn't want to listen to AM radio, started listening,
Seriously,
or stayed tuned in to WMNF just because they could depend on getting decent traffic reports on their way to work.
Yeah, well, if you can get your good news and some traffic, you're good.
And by having 5 minutes of news every half hour, even though on the hour it was NPR news, it still worked.
Okay, Sean.
I always enjoy following Summer because she hits at least half my points, so it shortens things for me. And Arlene, I appreciate your enthusiasm. But and by the way, I'm not against exercising. I'm a member of the Y. I used to exercise regularly before I got on the PNB. I now exercise by answering about 400 emails a day. But I do have some real concerns here because I just saw a report not 5 days ago on how 70% of young adults in this country aren't fit for military service because they're obese. And my worry is, what are we doing, thinning down kids so they'd be fit for military service?
Yeah.
I don't consider that part of the mission at Pacifica. I would prefer that we be doing shows on keeping kids out of the military, how to keep recruiters off college campuses and high school campuses. I think that's much more in line with what we're supposed to be doing here. And to equate what Fox has done with the teabaggers to an exercise show, I think is really amazing, because the reason that Fox has been able to perpetuate these small group of angry white men into a movement is because they dealt with real policies these angry white men apparently don't like, but real policies, whether it was the healthcare policy or the climate change policy. If we want to build a progressive left, we better start dealing with real policies that move people passionately. And I just don't think exercise shows will do that. Now, I could be wrong. Time will tell. But I think, and I bear with you for having to say this, but I think this is a bunch of happy talk. Okay, folks? And I want you to know, like I said, I believe in exercise. Every time I walk on crutches, I exercise, okay? But I don't think this is appropriate for what we should be doing. Now, on the question of, you said local flavor. Local flavor starts with local news. And we should abandon this idea that L.A. and San Francisco can put on local news. I love Berkeley. I love Richmond. I do not like to hear about them because I don't understand them at 6 o'clock when I'm in traffic for 2 hours. And if you want to increase market share, and by the way, George, I don't know when we should start to talk about promotion and everything. I'm happy to do it whenever you want. But if you want to increase market share, you're going to have to do promotion and programming in parallel. The big mistake at Pacifica for years is everybody says, oh, we'll expand our audience because we're going to change programming. I'm sorry, folks, you can change all the programs you want. If people don't know you're here, they don't tune in. I have been doing a show at Pacifica for 10 years now. And when people ask me, as they often do, because I'm in the community and all this, what do you do? And I say, oh, I got this show on KPFK. They go, what's that?
Where?
What's that? Now, you know, everybody talks about rebranding. I have news for you. Pacifica needs to brand. And I mean in their consciousness. I'm not talking about a T-shirt. And that's the problem with our promotion. We don't have a well-thought-out, targeted promotion strategy, okay? We have a T-shirt and bumper sticker idea of promotion. And if we don't grow up, get real, go to some of our subscribers who are professionals in the field and start to develop a real promotional campaign, and I'm talking about just as a test run. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see 500 billboards on the sides of buses that say something like, and I'll just use KPFK because that's where I'm from, KPFK, love us or hate us, don't be afraid to listen to us. So everybody goes, wait a minute, love them, hate them, what are they talking about? They turn it, and then you get them, and they turn the station on. That's when programming comes. Because once you get them there, you got to have the programs in place to keep them coming back. And we are fooling ourselves and have been doing it for years with this idea that, oh, some programming changes will change it. I mean, we had some programming changes, as Summer suggested, at Pacifica. We gave two programmers massive amounts of time, and now our program director won't give us the Arbitrons. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see the Arbitrons. Folks, also, most people, or not most, but many people listen to us in our cars, or in their cars. We need to have a promotional campaign that's out in the streets. Buses, bus stops, you know, the
benches.
Benches, yeah. Because when that's when you need to catch your people, okay? And I'll finish up here. We do need to go back to Pacifica's original mission. Pacifica was not meant to be just a left-of-center radio station. How many of you know that in the early days of Pacifica, believe it or not, the John Birch Society had a regular show on Pacifica? And I'll tell you why this was, I don't agree with them, but I'll tell you why this was good. Or that Casper Weinberger, when he was a congressman from San Francisco, when San Francisco used to elect Republicans, had a regular show on it. Now, why, as much as we disagree with these people, why is that good? Because that's how the debate starts. You take a John Birch Society, or a teabagger, let's use modern terms. Take a teabagger show. Let them shoot their mouth off for a half hour. Let them put their foot in their mouth. Then put it on a show that directly deals with them. You're going to get that controversy is going to make so many people tune in. And remember, folks, we've got to get beyond just our progressive brothers and sisters. We're singing to the chorus. There's all kinds of quote-unquote independents out there that aren't getting our message. And we do this to ourselves repeatedly. In 2008, we had the most historic presidential race in modern times. A black man and a woman were running. And I went to KPFK and said, come on, guys, put on, you know, an hour's worth of progressive analysis 5 days a week. I'll help you line up the people and everything. And you know what? I got told, oh, you're just a sellout to the Clinton-Obama Democratic Party. And I'm like, wait a minute, guys. There are all kinds of progressives. Maybe they're not Maoist, but there are all kinds of progressives out there who, if we were giving them progressive analysis, not only would they listen, but they'd open up their wallets and send us money. But because we didn't give them any programming, they all went to KCRW and Hardball, okay? Because that's what they were seeking, they were hungry for, and we blew it, and we got to stop that. Now, I can go in deeper into programming, but our promotion, but I'll hold off.
Yeah, this is the time we had scheduled for this topics workshop. However, it seems to me this is a valuable conversation. I've got five people, Alex, Rico, Leslie, Tracy, and Marcel on the stack. So my suggestion is that we take that topic workshop and put it on as the first item on the agenda on Saturday morning, which will also have the advantages. We'll be doing it downstairs, which is the obvious place to do it. So is there any objection to that?
Just a point of information.
Yes.
This is a very vague. I kept looking at this going, what are we talking about? Topics. This is very vague. What is this, a free-for-all or...
Well,
you know,
as I said, anyone who has a topic, now you want to talk about ways to promote programming.
Programming and promotion in tandem.
Yes.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the recalcitrant LSB issue. Anybody who wants to is free to talk about to set up a topic for themselves.
I got you.
I would like to make a counter-motion to extend this for 15 or 20 minutes to finish the stack. And the reason for that is, at least speaking for myself, and I think this may be true of other people, there's a lot of threads in this conversation, and I think by Saturday I will have lost most of them.
Yeah, well, I'd like to motion that we go through the rest of the existing staff.
Well, that is the
change topic.
Well, that is my suggestion that we.
Oh, I thought it was to move something to move the rest of this conversation to Saturday.
No. Oh. It's to remove that topics workshop to Saturday and continue this discussion.
Okay. Sorry. Thanks.
Okay. So I hear no objection to that. So we'll just continue. Alex, you're next.
Can I just?
Yes, certainly. Go ahead.
Sean, I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying, but I do want to make it clear that I am not equating the Childhood Obesity Project with the teabaggers, not in any way. What I'm saying is that by taking on some national movements and actually supporting them and being part of them from the inception, as opposed to reporting on them as news after they've happened, that we can have the same kind of effect that the teabaggers have. And I would hope that that would be particularly in some areas like peace and, you know, overused words, but social and economic justice. I mean, I get upset every time I walk out on the streets and see the number of homeless people that I see. You know, there are a lot of projects that we could be involved in and take on. So, no, I'm not talking about obesity as being a major issue for Pacifica. But I do think that as one project, it is fitting within our mission to not to make people fit for the military, to make people fit in order to live a healthier lifestyle and to be able to participate in politics and in the decision-making in this country. I agree with you. We need a lot more about why you shouldn't listen to the recruiters or why the people who are against the military should have the opportunity to come on your campus.
Alex.
Well, I'm glad there was so much important discussion about programming content. I don't want to talk about programming content, except I do want to say that I am against bringing Casper Weinberger back on the air.
He's dead. He's dead.
Even if we could revive him. I think the real issue is, I mean, we've had some excellent ideas, but the real issue is how is this ever going to be brought about? And if you ask that question, then you have to ask the next question is, what is the stumbling block? What is the obstacle? I've been involved in programming issues at WBAI and to some extent on the national level for a while. And from my experience, the big stumbling block is we have a feudal system in play when it comes to programming. Everybody has their turf that they feel they own, and occasionally their relatives are able to inherit it, or their best friends. It's an absolute dictatorship. There is no input from listeners in programming. It's something I've been trying to put in place for a long time, and I've frankly gotten nowhere. I'm the chair of the programming committee, the local programming committee at BAI, and it's one of the most useless positions I can imagine. In fact, I'm thinking of...
why you're suited for it, Eric.
if it's possible, maybe I could auction off the position on eBay and donate the money to BAI. I've been trying to reestablish the notion of a program council, which is something BAI used to have, but basically has died, hasn't existed for a while. We've had various management changes at BAI, but what we haven't had any change in is programming, not any substantial. There's been some tinkering here and there, but there's been no substantial change. And if you look at the, I was just looking at a graph showing the listenership and income and how it's been falling. Our high point was 2003, 2004, when there was various demonstrations against the war, the Republican convention. That was really our high point in New York, anyway. It's been a steady downhill slope since then. The responsibility is not all on the shoulders of Pacifica management. These are tough times. They are increasingly challenging times for radio broadcasting, as you all know. But we know some of the solutions. We've heard some good ideas here, some very good ideas. But very little is ever put into play because of something called turf. Everybody has their turf. Nobody wants to move. Nobody wants to be evaluated. Nobody wants to possibly give up airtime. I mean, asking a producer to give up airtime is like asking them to retire at the age of 35 or something. Right. So it's a real problem. And my issue has always been that we have to have some kind of mechanism for review of programming, some mechanism that includes listener input, and that in which some institutional form of it in which there's a collaboration between staff, management, and listeners, and the governing boards, and that simply does not exist. Any attempt to make it happen falls on deaf ears. I can't even get a survey of staff going. I run into roadblocks constantly, and I'm sure this is. I doubt if my the situation in BI is unique. It takes different flavors in other places. But part of what inspired me originally, by the way, was what KPFA used to have, which I understand it no longer has. So I would like to see some kind of policy statement from the board and from the executive director that we need these kind of structures, and the individual stations should be able to determine exactly what forms they should take. But we need something.
Did you want to respond, Aline? Did you want to respond to him? Okay.
I agree with him, and I think I covered quite a bit of that earlier. So,
Rico.
Yeah.
Hey, Rico.
Hi. I'd like to say that my colleagues Alex, Sean, and Summer's statements ring loudly with truth. When it comes to programming, first of all, I got into this KPFK business and this PMB business because I felt then, and I still feel, that there is nothing more important in this country than media, than finding objective media, mm-hmm. because that forms people's opinions and allows craziness to happen. and despite all the propaganda, we have to bring it back, that media, that information, there's nothing more important than objective information. And I concur with when you say that there needs to be debate on things, and that we shouldn't isolate and find ourselves just talking to one little group. You know, I like the idea, as Jennifer said, of having hard topics that I don't agree with, and having someone on the other side debating these issues, and not trying to slant it so much. That's one of the things I loved about Walter Cronkite when I was a kid. My parents used to listen to him, and I remember him always kind of not being on one side, but presenting objective debate. And I really wish that we had some of that now. Mm-hmm. Now, we always talk about programming, but one of the things I've never seen is that have we ever surveyed the listeners to find out what they want? And I don't think they should be the end all of our decision, but they should definitely be a part of that decision-making process. Now, I just want to say quickly, I want to leave you with five things that just for food for thought that I think are important and I would like to see more on the radio. One is I heard President Morales talking today about, we get used to things. And he was talking about the monetary priority that war has. When it comes to war, there's a blank check. But when it comes to anything else, even healthcare, it has to be, deficit neutral. But when it comes to war, anything goes.
That's right.
Whatever it takes. And he was saying that if we spent that type of money on in the environment and on green industry, what a different world we'd have here. Secondly, this is something I know it seems to me impossible right now because of the downturn in the economy, but there are opportunities during a downturn. And right now is an opportunity to expand, and a place like Chicago or Detroit, and you could pick up building space and you have an audience waiting there hungry, which would then support that action. And I know it's hard for us to think of it when you're like this, but people in a recession, people get rich in a recession because those people, they have the foresight to understand what's happening. Now, I'm not talking about getting rich, but I'm talking about taking advantage of an opportunity that's there, and that because of we're so under pressure financially, we are blind to even the idea of such an action. I would like to hear more about conflict of interest. There is no consequence. I mean, there is no coincidence that when you hire a president that comes from oil family like Bush, and then you elect a vice president that was associated with Halliburton, that we have a war
over oil,
using Halliburton.
Right.
And power.
And there was no bid contract. Nope. These things, you know, because they happen, we look at them as, you know, that's the way it is. But if you really think about it like a child, it's craziness. And it's so obvious. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. So I would like to hear more discussions of conflict of interest. Like right now, we have legislators that were past bankers writing legislation for bank. For finance reform. We have people who were with the FDA, with big business, who are now big farmers, who are now writing legislation for the FDA. You know, it's so obviously wrong, but there's no conversation about it. There's no debate. Right now, there's a war in Arizona on brown people. I mean, what they're doing right now, it reminds me of what was happening in the 60s. With black people, you know, it is a madness, and we hear about it. It's news for 15 minutes, and then it goes away. And it is important for people who are not brown to speak up for these issues, just like it's important for people who are not homosexual to speak up for hate against them, or people who are not black to speak up during the civil rights action. That courage needs to be shown now. And lastly, Prop 15 is coming up, which is about money out of
campaign finance,
which is taking money out of the whole race campaigning. And basically, what happens usually is the person that raises the most money, they win. You know, I don't care what your policies are, you raise the most money, you win. And this is to try and level the playing fields. And I think, that, you know, I'd like to hear more on that because I think that type of change will be the change that creates real change.
I couldn't agree with you more, Rico, on most of what you were saying. And it's funny because last night I was talking on the phone to someone and they mentioned, well, you're in, you know, most of the major areas. I said, well, there's a huge gap in our coverage, and that's the heartland. Much as Houston is in the heartland, it's Texas. It's not middle USA. And we need a Chicago or a Detroit or maybe both of those cities in order to really cover the major areas of this country. You know, we cover the East Coast, we cover the West Coast, and I'm not saying that it wouldn't be great to have a lot of other stations in the arsenal, but the big gap is in that heartland of the country where we don't have any coverage at all. The other thing that I couldn't agree with you more on the issues you were talking about, and I think one of the things that we should really be thinking about and considering how we can address it in terms of our programming and drawing up support is this whole issue of corporate funding of our elections, of our government. Granny D tried really hard and, you know, really brought some awareness to the need for campaign finance reform, but let's face it, as long as the people that are elected with the corporate money are the ones that have to pass the laws to get campaign finance reform, we're not going to see it happen. And as long as we treat corporations as individuals, we're not going to get a lot of reform from that perspective either. So, you know, these are, I think, major issues that Pacifica very appropriately should be dealing with and taking on and talking about, just as I think we should have played a much more active role in the healthcare debate. We didn't get healthcare reform, we got insurance reform.
Thank you.
And even that's not very good.
But we're always late. That's the problem. We're always late.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying we need to be covering these issues, driving people to them, not covering what has already happened. You know, that's important too, but particularly, and that's what Fox is doing so effectively with their teabaggers. They've found an audience and they're driving them to action.
Yeah, thank you, Arlene, and thank you, everybody. There have been some great ideas here today. Certainly, Alex's comments about program review, we need that at KPFK as well, and our program council has folded over the past 6 months or so, and we need to pull that back. Thank you for that reminder. Yes, we need news at KPFK. Okay, I'm going to join every one of my fellow board members from K and say, yes, we need news. We also moved our international Spanish news program into what someone here called the ghetto.
That was me.
At 10:30 at night. And I'm going to tell you quite frankly that most Spanish speakers are not listening to news at 10:30 at night. Instead, we have Alan Watts in the morning now. And frankly, when I get up in the morning, Alan Watts isn't my cup of tea either. Okay?
He might be my. Have him enough to refer to him as that dead poet because he's a big. He
might
half hour a week.
He might well be my cup of tea at 10:30 at night. I'm just saying. Now, all of that said, if I may have your attention for just a few moments here.
Yes, please.
Thank you. I'd like to wrap this up as quickly as possible. The focus here is supposed to be on promotion, and what I've heard here. And let's be honest, we have no listeners and we have no money. And those two things are related.
Excuse me.
And that is true. What I've heard here is that we need to reach out to Armenians, environmental activists, mainstream Democrats, or at least pull them to the progressive side. We need to, God help us, Pacifica is talking about campaign finance reform. We should look to our own house. What I've heard here is we need to do more with Arbitrons, perhaps. We tried all that for a year. We had a policy that said promote shows that have good Arbitrons and make money. And we're in worse shape now than we were a year ago. What I have not heard here is any call to appeal to, pardon me, oppressed peoples or young people. Okay? We have danced all around that today. We have talked about Armenians and environmental activists, and not one person has said, with the exception of Rico, who kind of went there, that we need to be talking to our black and brown radical folks in our town. When we get down to promotion, we need to be in our communities. Okay? And our communities in LA are not limited to our West Side communities. Okay? We need to be there, physically there, broadcasting from the communities. That is the only way we're going to promote this station. Those are the audiences that we are not reaching. You can look at our demographics. Okay? We need to go there. Those are the people that we need. We need listeners. We have no listeners, and we have no money.
Well, there's a whole lot of things going on in this conversation, so like Joe, to some degree, this is going to be an assortment of comments and thoughts. And I do want to say there are too many things going on in this conversation, and there's at least 10 points people brought up that in and of themselves should be discussed for several hours. Sorry, but it's true. But that said, let's see what I can do. I do think that those upsetting marketing words that I hate as much as everybody else, like branding and competition and differentiation in the marketplace, are important. And I also think that most conversations that I hear around Pacifica that use those words do it in the most clunky and unimaginative and unsubtle and uncreative manner I've ever heard. I have sat through long programming council meetings where all of those terms, which are actually really sophisticated if you talk to people that understand them, were turned into people need to hear the same voice on the radio at the same time of day, Monday through Friday, or they don't know what they're listening to and they won't turn it back on again. And that, in a way, is this Healthy Station Project stuff that was, again, a very sophisticated version of basically that same stupidity brought forward. I think it's been debunked by now. At least I hope so. But that said, the identity that most people know for Pacifica that I'm aware of is it's the station that plays Democracy Now. And I hate to tell you guys that, but that's Democracy Now's branding. That's not our branding. We lost it a long time ago. And we haven't thought of anything else. We don't have anything else.
Yeah, but she came from BAI, and that and Wake Up Call was her brand, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying that doesn't work anymore. It's gone. So what comes to replace it is really an issue. And I do think that eclectic, which is a word that Arlene used, can be an identity. Mm-hmm. And I do think that locally vital can be an identity. And I also think, I don't know how to say this in a way that most might not make people scream, but a people's media that is open, that you can come into and be a part of, can also be part of an identity. Because that's one thing we have on NPR. You can never get a program on NPR. There's no way. Now, it's true. It's not so easy to get a program on Pacifica either. But that's potentially a point of differentiation. Can you walk through the door? NPR, no, you can't. So I don't think that having a brand identity is necessarily a non-grassroots endeavor, and I don't think it's a non-local endeavor. And all of the things that, you know, get put like this against each other are not necessarily against each other, but it takes being a little creative and a little open and not saying the pat obvious things all of the time. I mean, Pacifica and KPFA were eclectic. Go back to 1955. Shows were on for 11 minutes, 9 minutes, 19 minutes, 47 minutes, 3 hours and 50 minutes.
Right.
Now, it wasn't an economic powerhouse, let's be honest, but it did build an incredibly loyal audience. And I know this because that loyal audience, many of them, many years later, saved this place from where it was going. They were loyal, if nothing else. And I do think that, you know, that loyal audience still exists to some degree, and it could be built again. And that's not everything, but that's a chunk. It is good to have some insanely loyal audience base, and then you have to build from that, but it's good to have that base. The way that that sort of programming functioned was with that folio instrument. It is worth thinking a little about what works like that in the 21st century, or could. I think it's some kind of web-based thing. I don't know exactly what it looks like. I do know there's people who get paid to figure out what things like that look like. The Knight Foundation pays them lots of money to come up with these platforms. We need people like that. They probably exist in our community. And they have to tell us, how do we do this in the 21st century? And I think that will give you that loyal core once again. And then the other question is, what's your elevator pitch for your non-loyal core? How do you describe in 50 words what this station is? I mean, you can do objective source of information. A lot of people think that's NPR. So the objective source of information that's not NPR, how do you say that exactly? You could be the station of oppressed people. I don't know if that's the elevator pitch that we want. And again, the programming has to deliver what the elevator pitch says. They've got to be in coherence. Eclectic, you know, voices that you're never going to hear anywhere else may be truly what we have right now, and whether we can make a workable elevator pitch out of that, I don't know. But there has to be one, and the programming has to back it up. What else? Finally, I guess, and I do think, I just want to say again, some kind of interactive open, this is a place that's not closed off, and when we can execute it, and no, we don't execute it very well because of all those futile things that everybody said, but if we could execute it, I think that has a lot of appeal. People really want that promise of two-way media, and it doesn't exist in most places. It can hear, and I think that has appeal. If you can hear your Aunt Tilly on the radio, you remember that for the rest of your life. And, you know, sometimes it's being a part of something that makes you open your pockets, especially if you're not rich in the first place. It's the things you're really a part of that you'll pay for. And, you know, the things that just let you listen to them, maybe not so much. Okay, two other quick points. I don't think health is apolitical necessarily. I really don't. I know a lot of people for whom that is their prime entry into politics. But I do think part of what any Pacific engagement with, you know, a first lady type pushed program, which is obviously going to be a little non-controversial because that's what the job is. So I think we participate in it, and I think we also have to do it with a critical eye and with a way of looking to bring out some of the deeper political implications. And that's kind of our responsibility because that's what we do.